Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And good afternoon, everyone. I'm Rob Linton. This is America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. We're glad you're along with us today. Again, I'm Rob Linton.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Woden.
And today's going to be a little bit interesting of a show. See, here's the deal. Nick Francesco and Dave Enright are both out on Easter egg hunts at the moment. So what happened today is it's actually just going to be the three of us. And it's going to be like the old days of the show before. You know what I mean? So here's what's going to happen today. We are going to rely heavily on your phone calls to give us a call. Kind of going to be an open line type format today as we get through your Saturday and get through the show today. And we want to hear from you. And it's going to be kind of a different format than usual. But I don't think Nick, I'm trying to remember, I've been with you guys for years. Nick never misses shows, does he?
Almost never, yeah. Every now and then.
Very rare that he ever really does, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, Dave, you know, he's out. I think he's also the Easter Bunny. One of the Easter Bunny helpers at the mall, isn't he? Is that how it works?
No, Nick was the Santa helper.
The Santa helper. I know. I sat on his lap. Isn't that a weird?
I might have, too. My family used to go to Midtown all the time.
Yeah, when he was at Midtown Plaza. So, yeah, we are looking for your phone calls today at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Again, kind of a different format today as we answer your calls and basically treat it like an open line Saturday, if you will. So we'd love to hear from you. And I know, Steve, you have some news as well.
Yep, and I'm getting the video stream set up here.
They don't want to see us. They don't. Yeah. I had a donut. They don't. I want to see us. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
All right. No. We've got some news from the past couple of weeks that we didn't get through. And one of them I really liked was a 5-year-old Ocean Beach boy exposed a Microsoft Xbox vulnerability. And apparently this wasn't his first vulnerability that he's found.
Kids going places
at five. 5-year-old Christopher von Hassel was playing his Xbox. His feet don't quite touch the ground yet in his chair. But he did something that the smartest guys at Microsoft will have to pay attention to. Just after Christmas, Christopher's parents noticed he was logged into his father's Xbox account and playing games he wasn't supposed to be. "I got nervous," said the father. "I thought he was going to find out." So in the video shoot, they shot a video of it. His father, Robert Davies, asked the 5-year-old how he was able to get in. Apparently, when you go to type your password into the Xbox account, if you click it wrong, it asks for your verification, and then you can just type random gibberish, and it lets you in anyway.
You know, here's the deal about these security things. Okay, you know, I was talking to one of my college classes last week about this. Do you remember when the V-chip technology first came out?
Yeah.
And you
parental controls in your television.
Exactly, and on the cable boxes as well. The kids know how to bypass this stuff and use it better than the parents do.
Yeah, I'm a tribute to that. My mother, back when I was 8, 9, 10, attempted to put a parental control on our computer. At the time, it was Windows XP.
Doesn't work.
And basically what happened is I got in there. Mm-hmm. I took the file that contained that parental control, and I threw it out.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, they're trying really hard, and there was a lot of regulation about, you know, the V-chip and violence and filtering that stuff out. But at the end of the day, parents are having to ask their kids how to use this stuff, you know? It's like, you know, so, I mean, probably the same thing there, I would imagine. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a flaw in the Xbox verification if you type your password wrong. So apparently, I haven't heard if they fixed it yet. I should try it on my son's Xbox. And so this is not the first time that the 5-year-old has flashed his tech skills. He's found 3 or 4 different vulnerabilities. At age 1, he got past the toddler lock screen on the cell phone. And 4 years later, he started on the Xbox. And so it's interesting. So Microsoft, has a bounty program. Here it is. Yeah. The Microsoft has come up with a fix and acknowledged, Christopher, on the Microsoft's website with a list of security researchers that have helped make Microsoft's services more secure. Christopher will receive 4 games, $50 in cash, and a year-long subscription to Xbox Live from Microsoft.
Oh, that's cool.
And who knows what he's going to be when he grows up?
Yeah, exactly.
A gamer or a security researcher?
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Or a little of both. So a 5-year-old finds a flaw in Microsoft's password verification.
Well, you know what's interesting, too, is a lot of companies are relying on other people to basically, they invite them in to try to break things.
Yeah, there are Google and Microsoft. Yeah. Most of the big companies have bounties if you find a bug. And then there are international security contests. CANSEC is the Canadian security competition. There's a CANSEC East and CANSEC West held each year, and they bring in people to break into computers.
Mm-hmm.
And the harder the vulnerability is to find, the more bounty you get for it. And what we're seeing sort of as an unfortunate side effect of that is normally when a security researcher finds a bug, they tell the company.
Right.
And then the company fixes it. Well, some people have been holding their bugs until one of these competitions so that they can win the prize. And the prize is usually the computer you ended up breaking into.
Right, right.
And so there's been some sort of backlash in the community about that. And how long does a researcher wait before they make the exploit public? So you tell the company about it, let them fix it before you tell everybody else. How long do you wait? You know, a week, a month?
Well, and a lot of these companies too. I mean, don't a lot of these software companies in particular, if they find, you know, a lot of them will hire people that have been convicted of
right.
cyber yep. attacks and things like that. They bring them in and say, look, you help us find vulnerabilities in the
yeah.
software. You know,
there have been a few cases where people have reported bugs and then they get hired to yeah. help fix the bug.
And make a lot of money in the
and
process.
Make a lot of money,
way.
Yeah.
yeah.
But interesting, Apple has taken sort of the opposite stance on a couple of these. There's a well-known researcher, Charlie Miller, who usually wins these competitions mm-hmm. by breaking into Mac systems at these conferences. In fact, CANSEC West was last month, March 12th, in Vancouver. And so Charlie Miller actually got kicked out of the Apple developer program for apparently reporting too many bugs.
Nice. Nice. Well, hey, we're looking for your phone calls today. Kind of an open line Saturday type format, 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Any computer questions, any computer news, anything you'd like to report, definitely give us a call. Easter weekend, kind of a little different. A lot of folks on the road and traveling. Maybe you're at home hanging out with family. Either way, do give us a call and throw us your questions, throw us your comments here on Soundbites today. And one thing I want to bring up, too, kind of early on in the show, a question I kind of want to pose is today, as you may know, is Record Store Day. Are you familiar with what Record Store Day is?
Yep. Do we still have record stores?
We still have record stores, and believe it or not, we still play records. It's hard to yep. believe. You know, we bring kids through the studios, and we show them, like, what are those things, you know, over there, where they look at the record players. The reason why I'm bringing up the fact that it's Record Store Day is it opens up kind of a lot of questions of, you know, how do you get your music these days. Mm-hmm. And obviously a lot of people say, well, I go to iTunes, I go to this, that, and the other thing. How do you get your music? We'd love to hear from you. Are you a person that still goes out to a record store? You want to buy that physical CD? You want to buy that physical record?
Do you count CDs as records? They are recordings.
Right.
But
exactly.
a lot of people, when you say record, they mean the vinyl record of days past.
Yeah.
And vinyl has been making sort of a resurgence lately. A lot of audiophiles say it's richer and yeah. more,
it's original to its recording.
Right. Yeah. Even a CD is sampled at 44,000 times per second, to make it digital. That's not analog. It's not the analog recording of an actual vinyl record.
Well, and one of the interesting things about recordings as well, you know, obviously this is Jazz Station, so we see a lot of the older recordings that are coming out being reissued all the time. There was a Miles Davis disc put out not too long ago here in which they recorded it in mono. Specifically, this is after stereo technology kind of was invented, recorded it in mono, and Miles Davis's whole thing was mono is going to sound the closest to the original than, you know, being in a studio. And yep. that's what they felt, you know. So it's very interesting, and you're right about vinyl kind of making a comeback. All of a sudden, people are wanting to buy records again and not even necessarily playing it that much. They'll keep them, you know, keep them all pristine in the sleeves yep. and everything like that. So we want to know from you, how do you get your music? If you're wanting to go out and get the latest disc, or you're wanting to go out and get the latest recording from your favorite artist, how do you get them? Are you going to iTunes? Are you going to the record store? Give us a call, 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299.
Yeah, there's a lot of artists that I know will record directly to record when they're in the studio, and then the record companies, Mercury is very, very notorious for doing this, will take the record and transfer that to CD.
Yeah. Well, and the thing too is, of course, there's a lot of reissuing happening now with, you know, some older recordings that are being cleaned up. They're being, you know, re-released and stuff like that. But it's interesting because I think that we're in a point in our, you know, kind of a generational, you know, we're in the middle of two different generations. You've got the younger generation that does nothing but goes on iTunes. You got the younger generation who's doing nothing but getting it off from the computer.
Yep.
And then you've got the older generation who, stays away completely from computers, and they're the ones that are going into the record stores. But then again,
they're still using their Victrola and their Edison.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
But I remember when iTunes, the iTunes Music Store first came out, it was a lot of complaints about the loss of the album, that it was all selling singles. And I remember as a kid listening to albums on my vinyl record player, and a song plays, I know what the next song is. I know what the next song is because it just all flows together. And there were most of the albums back when I grew up in the 70s were concept albums where the whole album was basically one big song. And the whole music industry has shifted basically to a single.
Yeah.
So even on a new album, there's one or two good singles and the rest of it's crap.
Well, and I can remember, I mean, you know, you went out to, you know, your local mall record shop and you were able to buy a song on a single, which was very interesting. You know, if you didn't want the whole album.
The 45 was the single.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it was interesting. The 45 and the 33 were competing formats at the time.
Right.
And it ended up becoming the 45 was the single. And then you had the B-side. Single. And then the 33 was the long playing. So it was the LP.
Right, exactly.
And that had the whole album on it.
And one of the interesting things, too, is that a lot of people, you know, and again, being that this is a jazz station, we hear this a lot of people say, you know, hey, why don't you guys completely automate your entire library? And for us, what's interesting about that is inside, there's these things called liner notes.
Yeah.
Which... yeah, you can get electronic liner notes and things like that as part of your iTunes purchases sometimes and things like that. But people love the physical feel of having that album, having that CD, and obviously the important information inside.
They used to have lyrics on them, too, and all that stuff we lost with digital music.
Yeah.
But a lot of them now will come with a PDF download that you can still get that back again.
So, again, we want to hear from you. As we celebrate Record Store Day 2014, we want to hear, you know, what are your thoughts? How do you get your music? When you want to hear a song, what do you do? Do you download it online? Do you go out to the record store? Give us your thoughts. 966-5299. That's 966-JAZZ. Or, of course, you can give us a call toll-free from anywhere in the United States, 800-790-0415. We'll go to the phones. Frank from Greece. Frank, thanks so much for calling today.
Oh, my pleasure. Well, I don't. I'm one of the old guys that have a stack of vinyl, but that's not what I'm calling about. I was thinking of buying a new iMac, and one of the options they have is instead of replacing the hard drive with flash memory. Now, I know flash memory has a limited number of write erase cycles, and I'm wondering how reliable you can expect one of those things to be.
The flash memory drives are very, very fast, and so that's why they're getting popular. But they are more expensive than a traditional Winchester spinning hard drive. And what we've seen on the reliability standpoint is generally speaking, the cells are rated for about 1 million write cycles.
I don't know how many write cycles I use.
Right. That's part of the problem. Nobody knows. So they say it's about the same life as a spinning mechanical hard drive, which has a mean time between failure rating of a few tens of thousands of hours. So you have that spinning mechanicalness that wears out and with flash drives, you have the writing procedure actually physically damages the cell to write a data into it. Reading procedure doesn't. So it's the write cycles that are hard on an SSD. But most of the SSDs are built to take that into account and say, you know, buy 1 terabyte SSD, which is like $1,000, and 1 terabyte hard drive is under $100. Mm-hmm. But, so you buy a 1 terabyte SSD and it might be only rated for 900 gigs. So it uses that like 10% slack space, and the drive controller watches how much data is being used, and when you write new data to the disk, it automatically uses a different physical piece of the disk, and then it has that extra slack space so that if a cell does happen to start wear out, it can move the data to an unused cell. So generally, we're seeing about the same lifespan of regular mechanical drives. Now, what Apple does do, what's kind of neat, is they have something they call the Fusion Drive that gives you the speed of the SSD and the capacity of the mechanical hard drive. So on their iMacs, there's a 1 terabyte Fusion and a 3 terabyte Fusion. And it comes with a flash drive portion of it that stores your OS and your apps. And then you have the mechanical, you know, 1 terabyte spinning hard drive to get the storage capacity. And the operating system automatically watches what files you open the most and will switch between them. in order to move your most common files onto the SSD to make them faster.
I see. So you'd recommend the compromised Fusion thing then?
Yeah, if you want to go for the speed of the Fusion, of the solid-state drive or flash drive, a solid-state drive is basically a flash drive in a case that looks like a real hard drive. Apple has skipped that external case, and they just have chips on a circuit board. So they're making it smaller and smaller to fit in the chassis. And what that lets you do is have that speed of the SSD and the capacity of the storage. So it's a compromise between getting, you know, $1,000 terabyte SSD drive and say, you know, $500 to get the 3 terabyte mechanical drive with the solid state drive on it too.
I see. I guess with the full solid state drive, I guess it's pretty quiet machine too.
Yeah, there'd be no mechanical noise. There's still fans in it to keep the CPU and GPU cool, but there's no hard drive noise. And Apple's also done a big thing with their fans. They tout their asymmetrical blades so that you don't get that constant high pitch whine that you normally hear with a spinning fan.
Yeah.
Because of the blade shapes, they can spread the noise out over many, many frequencies so you don't hear it as much. And then with a straight SSD, you know, flash drive in it, it's going to be really, really fast. You know, typically you see boot times in under 10 seconds to get a full boot done.
Wow, that's cool.
Yep.
Well, thanks a lot.
Sure.
Thank you very much, Frank. And as we head into break, again, give us a call with your computer questions today. It can be anything you want. 966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299 or 800-790-0415. Coming up, we've got lots more computer news and answering your questions on America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Tom Pethick. Please join me tonight for Artistry in Jazz from 6 until 8 p.m. right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And you are listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. I'm Rob Linton.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And we are Nicholas and Dave-less today, and they are out, coloring Easter eggs or something. I don't know what they're doing today, but we are here taking your questions and your phone calls at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Again, kind of an open line format. You got a question about your computer, you got a concern, something you want to ask, give us a call, and we'll be happy to answer your questions for you today. And to also talk about a lot of computer news and things that are happening. And Steve, one thing I was going to ask you about, only because I don't know that much about this, do you know anything about this new friend tracking thing that Facebook is doing? Have you read anything about that at all?
I haven't read about the Facebook one specifically, but Apple has one too. They have one called Find My Friends, available for iOS. Basically what it does is I'm hoping, at least in Facebook's case, because it definitely is in Apple's case, it's an opt-in service where you can run the Find My Friends app on your device and you publish your physical location. And so anybody that you've marked as a friend, it will tell you if they are physically nearby, because all these phones have GPSs in them. Yeah. You know, the tablets connect to Wi-Fi. So, you know, you're at a concert, you're at a mall. Where's my friend? You know, you don't have to call each other. You can find them on the map.
Well, and there's something really scary about that. You know, when we first had that, the option to check into places and things like that.
Yeah.
What was happening was, is people were getting hurt. There was, folks on the internet that were stalking these folks. And if they said, hey, I checked in down at Starbucks, all of a sudden it was causing a safety concern. And I'm just wondering at what point is this stuff too much? I mean, do we need to know where our friends are at all times?
You know? And it's the opposite of that is that, you know, thieves will see that you checked in at Starbucks, and then they know that your house is empty and they can go rob you. So we're seeing a lot of people. In fact, I've started seeing commercials where people are talking about don't post your stuff that you're leaving the house or you're going on vacation, because then your house is empty. You know, again, back when I was a kid, we would leave lights on.
Exactly. Yeah.
We had little tiny timers that would turn the lights on and off.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
It looked like someone was there.
And the whole thing that gets me too is it's just like the checking in aspect of it. It's just like, who cares? You know what I mean? Like, you know, you go to the.
Well, you want to be mayor of the. Well,
exactly.
Whatever.
And what was it? Was it Foursquare?
Foursquare was one of the big ones. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it comes down to the security aspect of it as well. And parents definitely need to watch this stuff with their kids, because I don't think kids necessarily understand what the safety implications are from doing that kind of stuff. You know, you go to the mall, your daughter goes to the mall with a group of her friends and you're checking in somewhere. Who knows? The bad guy could know exactly where you are. I mean, with the GPSs in these phones turned on.
And it's so easy to find people in different ways these days too. We've had several meetings at the Apple Cider from the safekids.org and the Center for Missing and Exploited Children, talking about how easy it is for predators to find you online. You know, you post on Facebook, oh, I hate that, you know, Mrs. Smith's fourth period English test today, and I'm going to go see the Tigers game tonight. Okay, now I know what school you are, and I can find out what city you're
exactly.
in.
Exactly.
Yeah, and poof, we've got you.
Well, and I think one of the things, too, is so many of the apps that they have now will require you to turn on the GPS aspect of your phone, but realistically, you don't need to, correct? I mean, if you've got an iPhone, for example, you can go in and turn off that GPS aspect, can't you?
You can turn off the cellular connections, but I don't think you can turn off the GPS. Well, there's location
services. The location
service,
that's what I was thinking
of.
Yeah,
so that's the setting you can actually turn off. So then your device doesn't know where it's geographically located.
Right.
So people can't find you either.
And that's,
but
that's
if you want to use the GPS and mapping service, you have to turn it back on. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So definitely, you know, something to look into there. But I just thought it was, you know, very interesting that Facebook wants to kind of continue to do that whole find your friends thing. And I heard about that yesterday. So
yeah, they have been doing something similar for a while. But now there's actually a facebook.com/find-friends section on the website where it will tell you if any of your friends are geographically nearby.
It's scary. I don't know. I'm just saying it's scary. All right, let's head to the phones. Raj from Rochester, thank you very much. Hopefully I pronounced the name correctly. Thanks for calling Soundbites.
Hey, Rob. I want you to know I've been a member for years. Now, I have a rather esoteric question. I usually buy my CDs lately from Amazon. And I ordered an Ann Hampton Callaway, her tribute to Ella.
Mm-hmm.
And they put it on the cloud, they tell me. And every time I click on it, I get a banjo. And this has been going on since March 18th. I've emailed and talked on the phone to, I assume, the techies at Amazon regarding the cloud. And they've told me twice that they have downloaded the album, and I click on it, and I still get a banjo.
Huh.
Have you heard of this problem? You have any advice for me?
Is it the icon of a banjo or actual banjo playing?
It's an actual banjo playing. And they evidently, to me, they have crossed their signal somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
Banjo thing on Ann's album.
One of the nice things that Amazon does do is when you buy a physical CD, they also put the electronic version in your Amazon Cloud Player.
Exactly.
And so you can see it electronically on your devices, and you get the physical CD to play. And it's a way to get it instantly, so you don't have to wait the 2 days to get it in the mail.
Well, right.
but it looks like something is not working right in their Cloud Player option.
And again, I'm sorry, you may have already addressed this, but isn't it saved in your account somewhere? So it's not like if the download fails or something like that, isn't it saved in like a library? So once you buy it, it's yours, it's there? Or does it give you only a certain amount of time to download it, then it disappears? You know what I mean? Like,
it's supposed to be saved there forever. I'm trying to log into my account now to make sure.
It's there. And I click on it wherever I see it. But I still get the banjo. And the other CDs of Ann's are fine. Like Easy Living, for example, plays fine. But not Ella.
No, Steve, let me ask you, is she downloading that into her physical computer, or is she just playing it off of Amazon?
That's two different things. Normally, when you click on it, it's going to stream and play. You can try to right-click on it and save as or download link, or depending on what browser you're using.
Okay.
It may say different things.
I could right-click.
Yeah, normally when I just click on it, it's going to play. Mute my volume here. But if I right-click, no. I got into my Amazon Cloud Player. There's a checkbox and then there's a download button. So you have a button to download it and you have a button to play it.
Okay.
You might try downloading it and see if that works.
Because
now my problem with Amazon is I buy my wife CDs.
Yeah.
So you might notice that Glee is the first one. So all of those things I've bought for my wife show up in my account, and it's recommending me new musicals and new mystery authors.
They're getting Glee.
Yeah.
Well, and one of the things about it, too, is once you download it, it's going to end up on your computer, and then you need to find where it went on your computer.
Probably in your music folder.
In your music folder. And once that happens, though, it's yours, and when you play it, you're not playing it now through Amazon's cloud. You're playing it off your computer. So that might alleviate some of the problems there as well.
Okay, I'll try that.
Yeah.
You're a lot more helpful than the Amazon folks, let me tell you.
Well, but good choice, by the way, too, in music.
Yeah,
can I just say that?
I first heard Ann on your station, by the way.
It's fantastic stuff. We appreciate the phone call and hope you have good luck with that.
Well, thanks a lot. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
And it's very interesting because a lot of these online players and stuff, like I found myself before, I use a service called eMusic.com for my DJ service where you go on and it's much like iTunes where you pay, I don't know, 69, 79 cents for a song or whatever. I've had problems before where it's downloaded and disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
But what it does is it saves it into what eMusic does is it actually has a folder on your computer.
Right. It may not be in the music folder.
Right.
There's
has
another folder somewhere. Right. So Amazon may do that too. There may be another folder somewhere called Amazon Music.
Right.
And you can try searching your hard drive for the title of the song, but quite often the file name is not the full title of the song. So that makes it hard to find.
Yeah.
So sometimes if you can find by date, you know, find all the files dated today, that might find it. But if you download it might be dated the day they made the song, not the day you downloaded it.
And there's nothing more frustrating than knowing that you purchased a song and you can't find it anywhere. It's gone, you know.
Yeah.
All right, next to the phones, by the way, again, open line Saturday, if you will. Give us a call with your computer questions, your comments, anything, as we are getting through the show today. 966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, just like Linda from Greece did. Hi, Linda. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Steve, I got a question for you.
Sure.
I went on my computer and I went into iTunes, and it said download the new version. I did. Well, way back, long time ago, they used to have a classic view where you could see the things on the side.
Yep, it's the sidebar.
Yeah.
Yep.
All of a sudden, it's gone, I don't know how to find it.
In iTunes version 11, Apple streamlined the interface. By removing everything you used to be able to see. So the way to get that back is you go to the view menu.
Okay.
And you can view the sidebar, you can view the status bar, and you can view the up next, which shows you the next song you're going to play. So you can turn all that back on again.
Because I have a lot of books. Yep. I like James Patterson, Women's Murder Club. So I was downloading a bunch of, doing that on my iTouch. And I thought to myself, it took me about a half hour to figure out where they were.
Yeah.
Another question. I've got Windows 7. It's updated and all that. But every time I go into iTunes and I plug in my iPod Touch, which is a fifth generation, and that's up to date, it freezes. Now, is it the download? Is it my computer? Because I just updated it to the new version, but every time I plug it in and I go in there, it freezes.
Yes. It could be the Windows. It could be the iTunes. There is a tech note, and I'll see if I can find it again, from Apple on how to completely uninstall iTunes and then reinstall the fresh version.
Okay.
And that can sometimes fix the problem. See, normally when you download an update, it replaces the version that's already there.
Right.
But sometimes you may need to completely uninstall what's already there.
Okay.
And iTunes uses a bunch of other pieces of software. There's the thing that watches to see if you plugged an iPod or iPad in. Other helper programs for running, movie files and music files you may play. So there's several other pieces besides the actual iTunes app itself. So completely uninstalling iTunes and reinstalling iTunes may help.
Okay, now how would I find those instructions?
If you can go to our website at soundbites.org.
Uh-huh.
As soon as I click this press button, it will be the first link that's posted at the top of the page.
Oh, that's another thing. I can't find where in your new interface there. It's, to me, it's confusing. I can't find where links heard on the show. Where do you find that?
Right on the main page now. All of those articles on the main page are the links heard on the show.
It's in the right-hand column?
No, on the left-hand side.
Left-hand side, okay.
And then if you scroll down to the bottom, there's a next page that will show you more and more pages to go farther back in time.
Okay. You're the only original there today. How come?
Yeah, things happen, neither Dave nor Nick told the other guys that we weren't coming, and so I show up, and I'm alone.
That's all right. Hey, you know, it's
fine.
Yeah. The old days.
Okay,
Linda,
thanks a lot, guys.
Have a happy Easter. Thanks so much for giving us a call today, and we invite you to give us a call as well, 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, and give us your computer questions, your thoughts. And again, I've kind of got an open question going today, being that today's record store day. How do you get your music?
And there are half a dozen record stores still in Rochester that are our sponsored participants.
There are, and I want to do mention them because they are very important to this community as well. You've got Record Archive, of course, Bop Shop, Lakeshore Record Exchange, Needle Drop Records, CD Exchange, and House of Guitars. All those folks are definitely doing festivities for Record Store Day today. It's important, obviously, to support local business. But again, my question that I posed, how do you get your music? Do you like going down and shuffling through the shelves at the record stores to get your albums? You know, we want to hear from you. 966-JAZZ.
What's the old joke? I got thrown out of the House of Guitars for straightening the aisles.
That's right.
But every time you go there, you ask somebody anything, they know exactly where it is.
They know exactly. It's unbelievable. I have no idea.
Yeah. Inventory control robots.
Yep.
All right. Before we hit a break, let's talk to Bill in Webster. Bill, thanks so much for calling Soundbites today.
Hi there.
Hi.
I got a server question. I don't know if you've got anybody there today that's up to it.
We can try.
Okay. We're running Small Business Server 2003.
Ouch.
With Exchange on it. And the question is, can we upgrade to something else like Small Business Server 2008 or something? And if you do the upgrade, will it keep all the settings that are in the server so we don't have to set it all up again, or is it like a new install?
You can upgrade, but I'm finding the article here. There are issues that you sometimes run into during that upgrade. So it's a good idea to have a full backup before you do the upgrade. But you can upgrade it. Microsoft does have a few tech articles about how to do it. I'll get those posted shortly. And with all the talk about Windows XP shutting down and Office 2003 shutting down, Windows Server 2003 is another one of them that the support is shutting down too.
I know that's why I'm asking the question.
Yeah, so they have upgrade.
Another question I got, if we went to 2008 or newer, in 2003 when you get Small Business Server and Exchange, it came with Outlook, so when you join computers to the to the server, it loads Outlook onto the computer to read the emails off the Exchange server.
Right.
Do the newer versions have that still?
I don't know offhand. Outlook was always part of Microsoft Office Pro that you had to buy separately. I'm trying to see what they have listed. Nothing listed on this tech note I just found on migration. You don't have to use Outlook. You can use pretty much any mail program to connect to the Exchange server if you want to, but it is sort of best geared for using Outlook itself.
Right.
The other thing you might want to look into while you're upgrading is moving to a Linux server. It has the principal advantage of being free, and you don't have to pay client licenses. And all of your existing mail clients will be able to talk to the Linux mail server. And so a lot of people have moved over to a Linux server to avoid the Microsoft upgrade tax.
Okay. My concern is I don't know if I have enough expertise to do that.
Yeah, that's where they catch you, that people are used to Windows. So that's the catch-22. People use Windows because they're used to Windows, and they're used to Windows because they use Windows.
So if we change that to a Linux server and Linux email, would the Microsoft workstation still talk to it okay? And
sure.
Outlook and things like that?
Yep, all the mail programs will work. The file services work. It depends if you're using application services. So if you're using, like an Access database server, then that wouldn't work under Linux. You'd have to switch.
The only thing we're using is just exchange for the emails, and they've got it set up to go to the internet. What is that, DHCP or
DHCP,
whatever?
Yeah.
So the workstations go through the server to the internet.
You might even want to look into like switching to Google Mail and cutting out the cost of a Windows server if you're only using it for email.
Right.
That Google used to be free for 100 users.
With the domain in them, okay?
You could use your domain.
You can do that with Google, yeah.
That's what we did here at the station, yeah.
Yep. It used to be free for 100 users, then it was free for 10 users, now it's $5 a month per user.
We don't even pay. Well, it's free.
You're a school.
Well, non-for-profit aspect.
Yeah,
if you're a business, I don't think you can do it.
Yeah, it's $50 per user per year. So if you don't have very many users, that could be much cheaper than upgrading to Windows Server.
Okay. Now, one other quick question. I don't think you're that busy today anyway, but my daughter started using the Google Cloud for the hard drive, and she put a bunch of files up there. And she's had two different instances now where she was working on stuff, and all of a sudden the files in the cloud get corrupted, and she can no longer open them. When you look at them, there's a squiggly in front of it, and it's only got 1 kilobyte of content. Have you heard anything about these kinds of problems?
Not really. One of the things that we see with Google Drive now and the file cloud is that it's designed for multiple simultaneous users, which is kind of handy. So that you can have several people editing this file at the same time. So it's designed to work like that. What often happens when a file gets corrupted is say on your Windows server, two people try to edit the file at the same time. I'm seeing a couple of things in the Google support groups on how to prevent files from getting corrupted, and I'll post a couple of those as well.
Okay. Yeah, because she was doing a big paper for her college course, and it was almost done.
Yeah, a lot of colleges have...
of course, she doesn't have a backup anywhere, so...
Well, that's the other thing. You should always have your own backup, too.
Backup of the backup.
A lot of colleges have switched over to Google Cloud because it's very inexpensive and much cheaper than a Windows server and Windows and buying Office for everybody.
All right. Thanks so much for the phone call. On the way, we've got more of your computer questions, your comments, your remarks here on Soundbites. I'm Rob Linton, and we invite you to give us a call, 966-JAZZ, 966-5299. And you are listening to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. On member-supported Jazz 90.1. We're listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. I'm Rob Linton.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Mike Loden.
And we are here today taking your questions and comments. Nick Francesco and Dave Enright both off today, so we're waiting to hear from you. We'll head right back to the phones, hear from Larry in Rochester. Larry, thanks for calling today.
Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Good.
Good, good. I have an iMac, and over the last 2 weeks or so, anytime I open up Outlook Mail, I get this little multicolored wheel that comes up and spins sometimes when something is processing.
Mm-hmm.
It comes up all the time now in Outlook email to the point where I can be typing a message and, you know, the wheel comes up and, of course, it's typing and everything stops. The letters will go in until this wheel stops and then you'll see things coming up. But it's gotten to the place now where it's just all the time when I use Outlook email. I don't see it in anything else that I have, and I have Norton Security Suite. I've run it twice to see if there's anything going on, but I think I may have picked up something. I'm not sure how, but I've never had this problem, and now I do.
It's a hint from Apple to stop using Microsoft products.
Okay.
No. Do you know how big your mail file is?
The mail file is actually through Time Warner Rochester, you know, the RR.com.
Right. But Outlook keeps a file on your computer of all your mail. And
uh-huh.
One of the things we've seen with Outlook is over time that mail file gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and can cause issues if it gets too big. There's no real hard and set rule about what too big is,
uh-huh.
but we see that being an issue. And so the rainbow basically means, wait, I'm busy doing something.
Right.
And it could be that Outlook is having trouble reading the file. It could be that it's running out of memory trying to read the file. Mm-hmm. So the couple of things you can do, in the utilities folder is the disk utility, and there's a repair disk function in there that will check your disk for any directory problems. And the directory is where all the files are. And if the directory is damaged, then programs can have trouble finding the directories.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of don't think it's that, because you'd be having problems with other applications too.
Mm-hmm.
So the other one is the Microsoft database repair tool. And there's a secret combination that you run, that I'm trying to type and talk at the same time. Mm-hmm. Microsoft database repair. And that's a tool in the Microsoft Office for Mac that will look at that Outlook database and try to repair it.
Okay.
I hope that's a lot easier to use than the PC aspect, because I've had to do the repair on the PC before, and it is a pain in the neck.
Which
it
is really interesting. Is. Microsoft includes this repair tool.
Yeah.
They must expect the database to get corrupted.
Yeah.
Now, the Apple Mail program stores each message as an individual file. So there's not one giant database like Microsoft does.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So if a single message gets corrupted, you don't lose all of your mail. With Outlook, and that giant PST file, that if one message or one piece of that giant database file gets corrupted, you can end up losing all of your mail because it can't read any of the database. So rebuilding the Outlook database is probably the first thing to do. You hold the key down while you're, they have a option key. Yeah. Hold the option key while you launch Outlook.
So hold option key
while you launch Outlook. And that will open the Microsoft database utility and will let you, verify and rebuild that database. And I've posted a link also on how to do that, because if that doesn't work, then the step is to make a new database and copy what mail you can into it.
And what is it about?
You also posted a link.
Yes, posted on the soundbites.org website.
Okay.
Yeah, and, you know, what is it about Outlook that we all like? I mean, I love Outlook, but you ask anybody, and they're like, stop using that program. It's horrendous.
Well, they don't know there's alternatives, because with Windows, that's what came with Microsoft Office that you probably bought with Windows.
Exactly.
And so that's what you're used to using. On the Mac, Apple has their own mail program, or you can buy Microsoft Office, or you can use Thunderbird email for free, or there's a bunch of email programs you can use for free. A lot of people always are under the mistaken impression that they have to use Outlook. I got to read my Outlook mail. No, you're reading email. It doesn't matter the service it's coming from, and it doesn't matter the program you use to read that mail.
Well, and a lot of things, too. A lot of the companies now are obviously using Outlook as kind of their preferred method of email delivery.
Right.
I know that here in the school district, they're moving Outlook.
Because that's what Microsoft sold them. It goes back to our previous caller, the Microsoft Small Business Service with Microsoft Exchange Server and Microsoft Outlook Mail Reader.
Yeah.
You can use any server you want. You can use any reader you want. But standardizing on Microsoft lets the IT people know what they're doing.
Well, and the thing about Outlook for, you know, the consumer at home, you know, it's cute. You've got all your calendar entries there. You've got your email. It can easily be saved onto the desktop program. And we're comfortable with it. But, it's a lot of people are saying, why are you still using it?
And that's sort of the dichotomy between Microsoft and Apple. Microsoft uses one giant program that does everything, mail and contacts and tasks and to-dos.
Yeah.
Apple uses four or five tiny programs that do one specific thing, but they all talk to each other. So your mail program talks to your calendar, which talks to your contacts, and they all talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So those individual programs are smaller and leaner and run faster.
Well, one of the things that was interesting, too, is because I've used Outlook for so long, when I switched over my calendar preference to use Gmail's calendar, it's like, okay, how do you get Gmail to now talk with Outlook? So I had to download this little component thing that makes them talk to each other, and suddenly it makes it more of a pain in the neck to talk,
Well, because that's the other problem with Microsoft, is they all use proprietary formats.
Mm-hmm.
So I mentioned the Outlook PST file. They don't use an internet standard mbox.
Right.
And the calendar is not the internet standard ICS. Mm-hmm. And the contacts is not the internet standard vCard.
Yeah.
So every other program uses the internet standards. Microsoft uses their own.
Because they like to be different.
Yeah.
Mike, how much time do we have before the break? About 5 minutes or so. Joe from Cheektowaga, thanks so much for giving us a call on Soundbites today.
Yeah, I think you hit upon it, Rob, that everything's all integrated, and that's why people tend to prefer it. I mean, you can do things like, oh, reserve a meeting room with it because you put it into the database.
But only if you're using Exchange Server.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's companies that have that Exchange Server that integrate mail and scheduling, so you can reserve conference rooms and projectors and AV equipment. So that's a nice feature of having that. It can be done with internet standards. The LDAP server supports the same sort of thing. So like I was mentioning to the earlier caller, a Linux server or even a Mac server that's based on Unix underneath, it still does all that same features. It's just not the Microsoft way. So there's a bit of a learning curve to begin with.
Yeah, just an add-on to the schema, the LDAP server, sure.
Yeah.
Well, Rob, I think you can answer this one best. You know, you used to be on another station.
Gee, I don't remember that. Yes, go ahead.
Well, I heard in radio it's not a good idea to mention other stations.
Correct.
Well, anyway, I was wondering, why did you not bring along the theme music? Was that a licensing issue?
Property of the other place.
Of the other place, yeah.
Yep. Property of the other place. There was a lot of that, unfortunately. So, yeah, that's why that happened. And plus, we wanted to reinvent the program. You don't like our new theme music? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, no. It's fine. Each has its own charm. Let's
Absolutely.
Put it that way.
Yeah.
Because I like each for different reasons.
The other place being as big and bad and corporate as they are, there was a lot of things, you know.
They probably wouldn't notice.
They probably wouldn't have noticed at the end of the day, but I don't know.
But then years later, when the lawyer does
exactly.
notice.
Wait. Yeah. He can sue somebody for something.
Yeah, exactly.
More money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, well, it's we reinvented ourselves.
One thing I was wondering is I noticed my printer, which is a Brother printer, it's a black and white printer. It gave me the low toner indication the other day. Gee, as I was printing out my tax forms, I got, oh, great, am I going to be able to print this? I went to look at the prices of toner, and if you get a genuine Brother toner cartridge, it's like $47 is about the cheapest I could find it. Yet, there's a lot of other ones that'll say, oh, yeah, works with the Brother so-and-so printer, but they're like half that price. Now,
there's two major problems.
Could you offer me any advice as to why I might want to get genuine Brother, or if I can save some money and get a cheapo cartridge?
There's two major issues with that, and the same thing happens in inkjet cartridges. Oftentimes, the name brand cartridges are better quality toner or ink, and sometimes the cheaper cartridges are cheaper because there's less in them. You know, it's half the price because there's half the toner in them. So a lot of times you can look for the capacity. With toner cartridges, it's often in pages per cartridge. So a typical laser toner cartridge will get a couple of thousand pages per cartridge. Inkjet tanks are usually sold by the milliliter, you know, 1 milliliter. And that works out to about $4,000 or $5,000 a gallon.
Well, and one of the things too that we're finding here within the school district, and we have to order cartridges for our printers here, we're starting to use companies that are selling recycled, because we have a couple of inkjets around the office, and they got to the point where they're just like, look, you know, we've got a new vendor. You can chop your cost in half by getting these recycled cartridges. I'm going to tell you what, we've had perfect luck with them. And there's companies here in Rochester that do that. So I think that's an option to look into.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks so much to Joe for calling. Coming up, we've got another whole hour of sound bites and your questions and calls. Do give us a call at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. And ask your questions. Give us your thoughts. Tell us your feedback. What do you got for us? We got more news coming up next hour as well. I'm Rob Linton, joined by Steve Ray and Michael Oden here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Again, give us a call, 966-5299.
Oh. Sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And you are listening to America's longest-running computer show. It is Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. I'm Rob Linton.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Wooten.
And two of the three players are missing today. Dave Enright and Nick Francesco are off, so it is us covering.
We were joking. It's the sound bite show.
That's
today.
Right. We are here taking your calls and questions. Very much an open line format today. If you've got a computer question, a comment, something you want to discuss, do give us a call at 966-5299. That's 966-JAZZ. Or toll free to 800-790-0415. And
the equipment's breaking
Mike's
down.
Mike's broke the... It's all right. It's all right. Yeah, it's good up. Times. Why don't you hit a news story while we fix Mike's mic?
Yeah. King Digital Entertainment, the maker of the wildly popular Candy Crush game, went public a little bit ago. On the New York Stock Exchange, trying to raise $500 million in their IPO, which would value the company at about $7.6 billion. It fell way short of that. Shares opening at $20.50 fell 15% by the end of the day. So it was not a good day for Candy Crush. It's still a big win for the founders, but the company has a tall order ahead. People who play Candy Crush, along with the sales and revenue it generates, have already begun to slow down as the next big fad hits the market.
What is the name of it? I can't remember. What is it called?
That's always the big question. What's the next big fad going to be?
There is one, but it's I can't remember the name. But I remember when Candy Crush was huge. Now everyone's like, who cares?
So prior to that, it was Zynga with their Farmville and all the Ville lines and Candy Crush from King Entertainment. So it's always a big thing about what's going to be the next giant thing. But you only get a few weeks usually before the next big thing comes out. So it's very frustrating. So King's revenue in 2013 was $1.8 billion.
Wow.
$568 million in profit. So why did they even bother going public?
Wasn't Candy Crush, it was free, was it not?
Right. And that's a big complaint in the gaming industry today. It's something that's being called freemium. It's free to buy to download the game. But then if you want the extra power ups or you're having trouble getting through a level, you can buy things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, instead of paying, you know, a typical console game is still $60. So instead of paying $50-$60 for a game, you get it for free, but you end up putting hundreds of dollars into these stupid power-ups,
add-ons.
But only a dollar or two at a time.
Right.
So it feels like it's less.
It's crazy. I'm blanking on what the newest one is, but there is a new one that's becoming really, really huge. And it's just like, you know, at the end of the day, and then it turns into, you know, this stuff ends up on Facebook and you're inviting your friends and everything like that. That drives me nuts.
Yep.
You know,
and if you have to have friends to help you play the game, I'm playing a couple of games like that now. I'm playing Modern Command and Real Racing. And if you have friends, they can add things to your game. But I'm of the mind where I don't want to pay anything to play this game. And there should be a way to play the game without paying any real money. They should have a second section of the game. So you look at the high scoreboard, there's some guys that have millions of points because they spent thousands of dollars buying the best things.
Yep.
And I don't want to be in that.
Two of my friends actually got in a heated argument about the level they were on Candy Crush, and they actually got mad at one another for one of them reaching a higher level. It's like, really? Really right now? Go to a library or something. Read a book. I don't know. I don't understand. I can remember like when you went outside and played.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Go outside and play. Oh, what was that on? American Dad.
Oh, yeah, that place called Outside. I remember that. Yeah.
It was an American Dad a couple of weeks ago where Dad got mad at the kids for all sitting inside watching TV and playing video games. So we kicked them all outside. So they're all laying on the grass. And, oh, look at them looking up at the clouds, imagining things. And no, they're all on their phones.
They're on their phones.
They're texting each other.
I was not allowed to watch television during the day on nice sunny summer days. It's like, go out and play.
Go out and play. Except, unless you were sick.
Then you were allowed
to stay.
When
you were sick, you spent the afternoon with Bob Barker.
I did. I was just going to say that. You knew you were sick. Yes, exactly.
I'll give $1, Bob.
Yeah, the best part about staying home sick was watching The Price is Right. Anyway. All right, let's head back to the phones. Roy from Pittsburgh. Roy, thanks so much for giving us a call today.
How do you do?
Good.
I have a problem with system mechanic. Shall I shoot the question?
Sure.
All right, I've tried logging in with Systems Mechanic Free, and then later on this morning I got an update for IoBit Malware Fighter, which is the same company. And in both cases, they keep asking for an activation key, but I don't have any.
That is one of the other problems we're seeing. It's like the freemium in the game market. In the regular commercial software market, there are three types of downloads. And they trick you because all downloads are free. You can download anything you want for free. To use it, you may need to pay. So that's the trick. So many programs will have a free version, and then they'll have a free trial, and then they'll have the paid version. So most of the time, what they end up doing is they make that free trial button be the default button. And so you've downloaded the free trial that you have to pay for to actually continue using, rather than the really free version, that you can use without paying anything. And then sometimes even when you download that very free version, I've seen that with Super Anti-Spyware, you download the free version, there's a little checkbox there. It says, do you want to activate the trial version of Pro? Mm-hmm. Well, then it stops working if you don't pay. So you have to be really careful when you download the program that you're actually downloading the free version and not the free trial version.
Well, I got to be careful because it says System Mechanic Free, and it keeps telling me what to do. And then finally it says I'll get a download in my inbox with my activation number.
Yep.
And I've tried that several times this morning, and nothing's come through.
Yeah, that's the other thing they do, is that the free version still needs that activation code,
right?
In order to run.
How good are those programs is what I want to know. Well, how good are they?
Yeah, that's the part of the problem, is especially things that claim to fix the registry.
Yeah.
The registry is a very dangerous thing to muck about in. And I don't specifically know this program myself, but we're sort of leery of any of these registry mechanics reg clean is another one. Generally speaking, they're okay, but you never know what something is going to mess up in the registry.
Yeah, well, I'm not really sure what they do. One of them does a bunch of things.
And that's, we see that with ads popping up on websites. Is your PC running slow?
Right.
Download this. And I get really annoyed about the TV commercials. You know, clean my PC. You know, we'll diagnose your PC for free. I can do that right now. It's slow. It probably has a virus. All right. To fix it, it's going to be a couple $100, but I'll diagnose it for free.
Right.
Yeah. And so it's not exactly a scam. But you have to be very wary about some of these programs.
Yeah.
And Registry Mechanic, they have a rating from PC Magazine, and from USA Today. Why is USA Today rating software? but I personally don't know anything about this specific program.
My whole thing is this. I'm one of these people that likes to keep business local. My whole thing is this. If you've got a problem with your computer, drive it down to a local shop and let a local person in Rochester take a look at it. Chances are it's going to be cheaper than the mess you're going to have to pick up after one of these programs goes wrong. Am I right? I mean,
yeah.
Bring it down to somebody who knows what they're doing. You know, that's my whole thought. So anyway, thanks, Roy, for giving us a call. Next up is this Dennis. Dennis, thanks so much for the phone call today.
Hi. Actually, this is for Rob Litton.
Uh-oh.
I want to know what your transmitting power is for the station. I'm just kind of curious.
15,000 watts.
Did you say 8,000?
15,000 watts.
15,000.
Yeah.
The reason I'm asking is I'm in the city, and the way I get your station is I have two 20-year-old FM, AM/FM portable radios,
mm-hmm.
because the FM band is better on those. On the newer radios, I can't get it.
Right.
I was just curious if you were going to up your wattage at any point, and if not, why not?
I would love to. Well, here's the thing. First of all, without giving us a specific address, whereabouts in the city are you?
Southeast, Monroe Avenue, Goodman Street.
Here's
area.
The problem with that neighborhood. You are under the direct umbrella of Cobbs Hill, and you're also under the direct umbrella of Pinnacle Hill. Pinnacle Hill, if you've ever looked up there, that's one of the highest peaks in Rochester, where every single radio station and every single TV station has their transmitter up there. So the problem is that you know, with all the stuff that's happening now, there's very difficult for a station like ours at only 15,000 watts to get through these radio and TV signals up there that are upwards of 50,000 watts. So what we've found with folks that live downtown, it actually took us about, I'm trying to think, like 4 or 5 years to raise the funds, because we only used to be 2,500 watts. Can you imagine this? You could actually yell farther than the station could be heard at one point. So the chances of us increasing our power any more, slim to none. We're actually at our peak of what we can do based on stations on 90.1 on either side of us.
Mm-hmm.
However, what we found that works and what I've found that personally works too is, you know, there was a time, Steve, you may remember this. You went to Radio Shack. They had an old T antenna. You know what I'm talking about? And so if you've got a radio that has an antenna receptacle in it, try one of those T antennas. If you don't, try moving the radio to a different place, because a lot of times moving it just a little bit will help pick it up.
Cut down on some of the metal between you and the transmitter.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, we've also seen some really great bounces. What was that email you sent the other day? A guy from Barrie, Canada?
Oh, yeah.
You know, so he's 200 kilometers away, but he's got what looked like a 30-foot antenna out his backyard.
Well, it, that's the thing.
He's also a ham operator. Yeah.
And you're looking, Steve's got our coverage map. Every radio station has a coverage map of where they can be heard and where their primary, their fringe, and their outside areas are. And, you know, downtown is really tough. And we've kind of got it on our wish list to do what's called a repeater.
Buildings are in the way, too.
Well, exactly. And there's just so much in that Monroe Avenue neighborhood. I'll be driving down Monroe Ave. And I'll be listening to 90.1, and all of a sudden, a modern rock station comes slamming on top of us, or a country station comes slamming on top of us. There's just so much RF down there.
I noticed that in my vehicle. Yeah. My vehicle can get your station, but then when I'm driving in the area, it's in and out, kind of.
What a lot of people are doing is listening to the internet stream instead of the broadcast radio. And you can get that from the jazz90.1.org website.
Yeah, I'm aware of that, but I'm an older guy, and I'm kind of just like to do the radio.
Well, there are internet radios you can get that look like a radio, but they actually plug into your network
online.
And they play online video. And then with like Pandora and Spotify apps on your phone, and in addition to the Jazz 90.1 app itself, you can listen to the stream.
Tell me again about your radios. Did you say they're like little portable, like boombox type radios?
Yeah, they're two 20-year-old Panasonic boombox stereos.
Is it an analog tuning?
And I bought another one on eBay so I could have one in two different rooms. And so like
being 20 years old, I would imagine it's not a digital screen on the front. It's one of the old analog tuning sets, right?
It's an analog tuner. Yeah, everything is analog.
Yeah, you know, and the problem with that too is I've got one of those home in my garage where you have to like just get it just right with the analog dial on in order for it to lock on. And that's why the digital tuning sets are a little bit better, because you're either going to get it or you're not. Mm-hmm. You know, with the digital, you tune it to 90.1, you're either going to get it or you're not. So that might be something to look into too. But yeah, it's tricky in that neighborhood down there, and that's why we always point people in that neighborhood definitely to our website if they can.
We even see the opposite problem with FM transmitters you buy for your phone, so you can listen to your phone or iPad on your car radio. Mm-hmm. You have to find an empty station to broadcast on,
which is becoming harder and harder.
Right, and because there's always bleed over from nearby stations, which there shouldn't be, but there always is.
Right.
Well, and so finding an empty station for your FM transmitter, that's why so many cars now will either have a USB connection or a Bluetooth connection, so you don't need to use FM.
Well, and recently, the Federal Communications Commission opened up a bunch of frequencies in every area, low-power FM stations. Yep. So the room that we did have is going to be gone, because there's going to be all these stations between stations. But to Dennis's question, you know, I would say, you know, be patient, try moving your radio around if you can a little bit. But unfortunately, we're at our actual max of what we can do power-wise because of what's around us. So,
I had forgotten about the T antenna. I have a receiver, but it does not have a T antenna.
Those T antennas are something else. They make all the difference in the world.
You Gold pop Crest the back
electronics
Goldcrest,
or,
yeah,
like
or
that,
something or, like that. Yeah. 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 So you pop the back cover off the radio, and you'll see the antenna coil.
Well, and that's the thing too. You know, even a wire, if you got a little spare wire around, I mean, getting it up as high as you can makes all the difference in the world. And
I remember when I was in school, electronics class, we built crystal radios, and I figured out that when I clipped the antenna to the telephone rotary dial stopper, I was using the entire telephone system as an antenna. And so I picked up Radio Madrid on my crystal radio, and I won best radio.
Well, and I had
crappy soldering, but I won best radio.
Well, and I can remember, we're talking about Radio Shack. I can remember when Radio Shack carried radios, I mean, and parts and things like that. And
now the parts is a little back area that nobody knows anything about anyway.
it's really tricky too, because we get that question all of the time for the radio station. You know, when are you guys going to bump up the power? I would love nothing more. I mean, number one, it's expensive. The power increase that happened back in 2004 was about $150,000. So, I mean, it's definitely very expensive for us, but we're actually at our max.
It's $15,000 1 watt light bulbs, or
there you go,
1500 exactly. 100 watt light bulbs.
And, yeah. And you know, the interesting thing too is we got that you mentioned the email. We got an email from somebody that I think was in Ontario, right there,
yeah,
or something, that was listening to us with the skip over the water. Now, radio can skip over water. We find that more with AM than we do FM. But this person had this massively huge antenna in the back.
He was a ham operator,
house.
Also. Yeah.
Well, I think at certain stations from Ontario, there's a country station I can get from Belleville. So there is stations on the FM dial that do skip over water.
Yep. Yeah.
Well,
so.
I remember when I was a kid, we used to visit my grandparents in Florida, and on especially clear nights, uh-huh, I could pick up a large Rochester radio station,
yep,
from the Orlando area.
If you try
CBS Radio Mystery Theater, I'd always listen to it before I went to bed.
You can pick up like WCBS, like New York City and stuff at night,
oh, yeah,
if you want,
yep,
to.
All right. Well, listen, we got more calls waiting, but I think what we're going to do is we're going to head to break. Before we do that, want to give our thoughts to Nick Francesco, home recovering from the flu. We hope he feels better, and we've been exchanging inappropriate texts that cannot be mentioned on the air, as he tells us, how he feels about my job as co-hosting. So thank you very much to Nick and everybody else, and whoever's listening now to us and whoever's calling in to 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. More of your calls and questions coming up on Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And you are listening to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. I'm Rob Linton.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And we are here today holding down the fort.
Boogie.
I love this song. This is a great song. And when you actually find somebody that can actually dance to this, it's pretty impressive. You ever seen anybody do that?
Yep.
We're holding down the fort today. Nick Francesco out ill. We do send our best wishes to him. And Dave Enright.
Just out.
He's out. color and Easter eggs or something somewhere. So we invite you to give us a call with our kind of open line Saturday format today. Anything you want to talk about computers, give us a call. And next we go to Leon in Rochester. Leon, thanks for the call today.
Yeah, I got a quick question. Cakewalk, is there any other better vinyl to computer to external hard drive or to my MP3 player, my iPod or my iPod Touch than Cakewalk? Because Audio Technica sent me that when I brought their turntables.
Audacity is one of the free open source audio recorders and audio editors.
We have that here.
Yeah, that's very popular. There are a bunch of different audio recording programs available. Of course, Adobe Audition is kind of the commercial big daddy.
It's expensive, but it's good.
But that's expensive, yeah.
Audacity is a really great program, especially for somebody who just wants to record regular two-track. If you want to go bring a band in your basement and record them, Audacity is not the way to go. But if you just want basic two-track left and right recording, Audacity is a great program.
In fact, Audacity actually does editing as well. Yeah. I'm using a simpler program called Audio Recorder. From Ben Schanefeld on my Mac. All it does is record.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a little tiny window that lets me play and pause. Because that's all I want to do right now.
Yeah.
I'll edit it later. But right now, I want a little tiny recorder.
Yeah.
And I also was wondering, because I haven't set my turntable up to my PC. Will I be able to put the songs on the right on my iPod to say what they are?
You'll have to go through iTunes first. And then in iTunes, you can edit the meta tags. So that's the next step about when you make an MP3 file. Generally, song files have no information in them but the song audio data itself. So there's these meta tags where you put the artist and the track and the title and the date and all that stuff. There's a online service called Gracenote that iTunes uses to read the track titles of commercial CDs. And that was another, college project a guy put together and made a fortune selling it to Gracenote.
Mm-hmm.
But you can edit those tags yourself. So in iTunes or MP3 players in general, you can edit those tags to fix spelling errors or to add information that you want. And then iTunes will send it to your iPod.
Well, and a lot of the options, too, out there for people. Do you have a lot of LPs you're doing this with or just a couple? Do you have, like, an entire library?
I've got a lot of LPs. I've worked for WBLK in Buffalo in my youth and worked for Record Theater in my youth. And I travel all over the Eastern Seaboard and even in Chicago where I work.
And one of the things that Steve's looking at this right now, there's a lot of great USB turntables, but Steve, I don't have a lot of experience with these, but I know that you either get garbage or you get really good ones,
Yeah, the Ion is kind of one of the biggest names in the USB turntable. Basic one's about $100.
Yeah.
And
I've already got one. I've got an Audio Technica cost me about $349.
Yeah, that's a much better quality. Yeah. One of the things that you have to watch out for is typically with an LP, they are low low impedance.
Yeah.
Mic level. And so inside the box that gives you that USB connection, there's a preamp that will amplify it back up to line level to do the recording on. And the better the quality of the electronics in that recording box, the better your actual sound goes. In fact, I'm using one right now on my Mac called the iMic, which is an audio to USB adapter. So I just have a regular quarter-inch jack that I'm pulling off the audio panel here. It does the electronics to convert it to a line-level USB.
Well, and some of the units are selling now that I actually like and we've considered getting here because we have an entire vinyl library here at the radio station as well that, you know, it would be helpful to put it into automation and computer form. They've actually got them now that, yes, you can go direct into your computer, but if in cases like ours where we might want to put it on CD, they actually come with a CD built-in CD recorder drawer on board. So there's a lot of different options, but along with each of those comes their own software, I would imagine, in most cases.
Most of the time, I see them come with Audacity.
Yeah.
Because it's free and they don't have to... Yeah.
What's the best external hard drive to store on that music on? Now, a buddy of mine was telling me that the best one is iOmega for Apple. I don't know. Is that true or...
Not anymore. iOmega used to be a very popular brand. I haven't heard of them much. They were real popular for their zip drive and their jazz drive of removable storage. It was like 100 megabyte floppy. So you could store a lot of stuff and easily carry it around. They still make hard drives. We haven't really done much with them anymore. Mm-hmm. What we generally hear of is the best hard drive in the AV world is from G-Tech, the G-Technology G drive.
Yeah.
They are very fast. They are very quiet. And that's a big thing for audio people. They don't want any noise into their recording. But they are a little bit more expensive than standard drives. Mm-hmm. The bigger issue with hard drives is the interface. USB is cheaper. And then FireWire is faster, and Thunderbolt is fastest. So it depends on the connection you have as well.
Yeah. Well, Leon, thanks so much for the phone call today. We appreciate it. But yeah, we're starting, and I always tell people too, if you ever want a really good business and you want to start a business at home, seriously, get into the business of transferring LPs over to CDs for people because, you know, it's all in real time in a lot of cases. So it's a time-consuming process, but a lot of people are doing it now.
I'm sure the local record stores do that as a service as well. Yeah. Just like some of the photo stores will do 8mm and slides onto video as well.
Yep, absolutely. All right, let's head to the next phone call. Steve from Greece, thank you very much for calling Sound Bites today, Steve.
Well, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I got some background to give you, and I tell you, I just am confused as all get out. All right, I have desktop, I have laptops, I have tablets. On my desktop, I cannot get to the internet. None of my browsers, i.e. Chrome, Firefox, will allow me to get to the desktop. The router lights are correct. The modem lights are correct. I've taken the... line from the modem directly to the back of the computer. Nothing. Let's see. A couple exceptions. My Dropbox updates, my Avast updates, and my laptops work fine.
When you try to open a web page, what's the error you're getting?
The one this is brand new for IE, so I've not gotten this one before. But it says browser safeguard DNS lookup for browser safeguard com failed. The requested name is valid, but no data of the request type was found.
That's probably an error in the DNS table in your network settings. If you're lucky, it's just a typo. If you're not lucky, it's a DNS Trojan. So the DNS is the domain name server. And what that does is it translates, like the phone book of the internet, it translates the name, you know, jazz90.1.org, into the actual numbers of the computer. And so in your network settings for your Ethernet adapter or your Wi-Fi adapter, depending on what you're using, generally speaking, you want that to be set to obtain address from the server and obtain DNS from the server. And so your internet router from your internet provider gives you those addresses. If an address is typed in wrong, it won't be able to find the actual name. And so that's typically the error that you would see when that happens. So check your network settings to make sure that they're both set to automatic, and that they don't, have any odd numbers typed into them. There are several, DNS changer, Trojans that sneak into the computer, sometimes, masquerading as a video update. And they change your DNS so that you're pointing to bad websites. So you go to paypal.com, it takes you to a fake paypal.com to steal your credentials, because the DNS IPs are the same, have been changed. One way to test if that works or not is you can open a DOS window and type a ping, and you can put a number in of a computer. Or you can go to the web window and type the number in of a website instead of using the name of the website. But oftentimes that doesn't work because most websites are multi-hosted. So if you can go to a website and type in ping apple.com or ping microsoft.com, that uses the DNS lookup. But if you type in numbers, then the ping should work if all your internet is working. The problem is, how do you get those numbers? If you have a pen quickly handy, the Jazz 90.1 website is currently at 205.186.179.171.
Why do I feel like you just gave away like the security code to somebody's suitcase or something?
No, that's the address.
Or is that public?
That's the public address of the website for Jazz 90.1.
Okay.
Because that's so hard to remember, it's much easier to remember as jazz901.org. Right. But the DNS then takes that name, right, looks up the real numbers, and your computer goes to that real number.
Right. Well, thanks so much, Steve, for the call today. We appreciate it very much. And let's head next. We'll stay in Greece, shall we? Mark in Greece. Thanks so much for the phone call, Mark.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Rob, I just wanted to tell you one thing before I ask my question. I went to that Bonorama show a few weeks ago.
Oh, great.
It was fantastic.
Awesome. Glad you liked it.
Had a great time.
Aren't they an incredible group?
On any of those shows you guys do, because they were excellent.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I couldn't ask for a better night of entertainment.
Aren't they incredible? Weren't they an incredible group?
Oh, great. Yeah. Great. You know, my daughter plays clarinet and saxophone at the school, and we all went as a family, and we just had a ball.
Great. Well, thank you. I appreciate that feedback very much.
Yeah, it was great. The other question I had for you guys was taking Nick's advice about maybe upgrading an old computer to Ubuntu, and I have a laptop here that I wanted to upgrade to Ubuntu, and I burned the ISO to a disk and put it in, and it restarted and did its thing and said I had everything, had all these check marks, and then it said it was preparing to install. And it stalled on that and would not install. It just stayed there for, I don't know, a better part of 45 minutes, and the disk drive stopped spinning, and it just never installed. I got a little circular icon spinning the whole time. I was wondering if anybody had a clue about that.
Not offhand. Nick is our Ubuntu expert. One of the things you could try, you said you burned the ISO to a CD?
Yep.
You could try using a flash drive instead of a CD. They are faster access than a CD.
Right.
And they're writable, which may be an issue. It's trying to write a preference file or write a temp file. The other thing, too, is are you replacing a Windows OS on the hard drive, or are you adding it?
Give me the option to either run alongside of or use it instead of.
Yeah.
And I never got that
never
far.
Got
it never
to that far.
You know, it never gave me the option to partition or anything.
You don't have a weird partition manager already installed, do you?
No.
So it should have. So yeah. Best thing I can say is try again and call back next week when Nick is still here.
I can try the flash drive option and see if that works.
See how that works.
All the directions to make the ISO on a flash.
Yep. Yeah, booting
it did allow me to run the operating system off the disk.
So that implies that it worked.
Yeah, it just wouldn't allow. It wouldn't go any further about the installation. So I'll have to talk to see with that USB drive if that.
Yep, give that a try. See if that works.
And one comment about music files. If people aren't using iTunes and want a really neat way to edit their tags, there's a free program out there called MP3 Tag.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I use it constantly, and I think it's great.
There's a lot of tools out there. It's just a matter of being able to find them and getting them to work right and everything like that.
Yeah, that one's pretty simple. It's light. It's small.
Yeah.
And it automatically updates, tells you there's an update for the program, and it's real simple.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mark. We appreciate the phone call today.
Looks like that one's Windows only. I've been looking for a good one on the Mac. I've been using one called Media Rage, but it doesn't have all the extended tags. One of the problems is iTunes uses extended tags, so Apple has their own proprietary stuff.
Yeah.
An MP3 tag editor is one of those like holy grails that audio guys want.
Yeah.
You know, what can I edit and where can I edit it from?
All right, I think we've got time for one more quick phone call before the break. Is this, I believe, Joel from Pittsford? Thanks for the call today,
yes,
Joel.
Yes, it is. My question is about music services like Spotify, the Apple service, the Google service. Can you guys sort of compare and contrast them? What's the advantage of one over the other? I'm thinking about going with one, but I'm not sure, you know, which would be the best for me.
Yeah, that's the problem. There are so many of them. Most of them have free trials, which is handy, that you can try them all to see what you like. If you're already using iTunes for managing your music, it's very easy to use iTunes Radio built into iTunes. But Spotify and Pandora and Moog and RDO and 15 or 20 different music services, they all are generally the same. You play music from the internet. Most of them will also let you buy music. So if you like a song, you can buy that song to keep it. As we mentioned earlier with the Amazon, when you buy a physical CD on Amazon, they have something called Auto Rip that you automatically get the MP3 that you can play from the Amazon Cloud Player or download to your computer and play it there. I did find an article at the Next Web on comparing 15 of the best streaming music platforms. You didn't know there were 15 of them, did you? Yeah. Pandora and Spotify are probably
the two biggest
common ones. And a lot depends on the kind of music you're interested in. Is some of them are a little better for classical, some are a little better for jazz. Mm-hmm. And so... trying them all and seeing which one works for you is a big issue.
Well, you know, the thing with Pandora and that type of thing, you're really not dealing with having to do a subscription fee, but what you do have to deal with is advertisements and such within the stream.
Generally, there's two pieces. It's free, but they play ads, or you pay a fee, and there's either no ads or less ads.
Right.
Yeah, I currently use Pandora, and I actually use their paid service, but I'm thinking about one of the ones where you can select the music that you're interested in, like Spotify, and you know which has more music.
Pandora does have an option where you can say more like this, so you can search for a song and then say more like this and make a station based on artists that you like. But a lot of it's interesting. It's some of it is back to the radio where random songs played and you never knew what was coming up next.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing. And a lot of people want to have that flexibility. There are services out there like iHeartRadio and things like that that give you the ability to build your own stations. It really depends on your preference. You know, it really does. I mean, it's again for an average listener of Pandora, they don't mind ignoring an ad every once in a while. But some people that's how what they listen to all day. They don't want ads. You know,
right.
they want to be able to, and they want to customize their own station.
I like the ad because we often play Pandora in our store, the Smooth Jazz Station. We found that people are a lot more mellow when we're playing jazz. But we won't get into the smooth jazz
exactly.
argument. every now and then we hear this ad. Are you still there? Because they have to pay the artist.
Yes, they do.
For every song that plays. And so if you just have it streaming in the background and you're not really listening, that's wasted money.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was crazy. One of the big contract negotiation points that Apple was running into with the music industries, because if you skip a song, how much of the song plays before they have to pay the artist? And of course, the artist says, you know, any of the song. Mm-hmm. You play a second of my song, you have to pay me.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple is saying, well, that's not right. How about 30 seconds? How about 15 seconds? And so that was the argument between it.
Yeah, so there are a lot of options out there. Definitely, it's kind of finding one that's gonna the best fit. But are you going to post that? Are you going to post that article up on the Soundbites website? You know, definitely check that out. But it's really auditioning the type of program that's going to work best for you, and you know whether you want ads, whether you don't want ads, how much flexibility you have to build your own playlist and all that kind of stuff. There's so many options out there now.
And most of them have web apps as well as mobile apps for your tablets, and phones.
Yeah. Well, Joel, thanks so much for giving us a call from Pittsford. We've got time for a few more calls before the end of the show today. If you have anything computer, comments, questions, whatever, give us a call at 966-JAZZ, 966-5299, or toll free, 800-790-0415. I'm Rob Linton, along with Steve Ray and Michael Oden, here on America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Sid O'Connor. Join me tomorrow morning from 6 to 8 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And you are listening to Soundbites. I'm Rob Linton.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And we are in the final segment of the program today. For those just tuning in wondering, where's Nick? Where's Dave? Well, Steve is the soundbite today. Nick is out. Dave is out. They'll be back next week.
And if you're just tuning in, you've missed most of the show.
Most of the program. Where have you been? Yeah. All right, let's head right back to the phones. We've got a bunch of people waiting. George from Greece. George, thanks for the call today.
Rob, how lucky could I be to get you there this week? because I have this nice thank you letter from Jazz 90.1, signed by you, with no mention of sound bites in it.
Uh-oh. Must have been a clerical thing.
Yeah, or else maybe you have trouble spelling sound bites.
That could be as well. That's interesting. Huh.
As long as it wasn't a polka form.
The best part about being a GM, though, is I can blame it on the staff. You know what I'm saying? That's probably what it was. No, it was probably just something that got flagged as a jazz pledge rather than a soundbites pledge. Either way, though, we appreciate your support. Thank you.
I think that you're showing partiality to those polka guys.
Well, there always has been a secret little kind of like race to see who can raise the most money. And I think you guys walloped polka this year, didn't you, Steve?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I figured
although the polka army will come out again and hurt us.
That's your name in the letter.
What's that?
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, I thought that was the reward for coming in with the biggest amount on the pledges was to get the name in the letter.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it was probably just a little snafu on our end. We apologize.
It was nice of you to send it out. I have a further idea for you.
Well, what we do in that case is Nick Francesco will come over and personally he'll mow your lawn.
Yeah.
That's how we thank you for Soundbites pledges. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he's probably due to come this weekend.
That's right. Exactly.
with regard to antennas, I get a little catalog from a company. Can I give the company name?
Sure.
There's a company that's called C. Crane, who seems to specialize in radios and has a few different items of antennas to pick from. And I know those aren't easy to find these days, and I just thought if you've got a serious situation with people trying to pick up the station, they might want to consider that.
And it would appear a lot of them are amplified antennas, which a lot of times is the answer, but a lot of times it actually amplifies. It doesn't really do anything, we found. You know what I'm saying? Like, what the amplified antennas do is they try to obviously grab your signal and boost it up the best they possibly can, but we've seen people that those don't work. But we're looking at that website really quick, and there are a ton of options.
A lot of options.
But you are acquainted with that one.
I'm not familiar with that site personally. Steve, are you? Have you heard of
it? No, I haven't heard that one. I have heard one called QuickerTech. That's bigger antennas for your computer to get better Wi-Fi signal.
Well, for whatever it's worth, I just thought I'd mention that.
No, I appreciate that.
I imagine there's people out there that would like to try to grab the signal, and if this helps them, that's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's one of those things, and I'm very much a trial-by-error person when it comes to people giving us a call with those questions, and the first thing that we always recommend is, you know, obviously changing the position of the radio, because in some cases, even turning it slightly make all the difference in the world, and then trying a T-antenna, and then start investing into, you know, maybe a powered antenna, things like that. So, yeah.
I think you got it.
All right. Thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it, George. And I'll work on that letter thing. I apologize. You know, I sign and personally send every one of those. You know what I mean? So I'm sorry about that. Okay. Oh, we should talk about the pledge drive for a second because we haven't talked to the folks since. First of all, thank you to everybody that pledged. You guys helped us get to that $50,000 really quick. We appreciate all the support, all of the Soundbites listeners. And again, I think the Soundbites folks whooped the Polka folks this year. I'm not sure.
For the first time ever.
For the first time, I think. And that's okay. I'm okay with that. I think that's great. But seriously, anybody who pledged over the past membership campaign, thank you so, so much for your support and supporting this program. And Mike, Blake from Canandaigua, thank you very much for the phone call.
Yeah, my wife and I each have a laptop. Mine's running Windows 7 and hers is 8. They both came from the same store and came with Kaspersky antivirus. We've been happy with that. When it came time for the trial run to end, we renewed it for a year. We paid for it. No problem with that. But now, I kind of feel weird about buying something from the Russians.
Yeah, because Kaspersky, it's not the Russian government. It's just
I understand that. But
a guy who happens to be Russian. Yeah.
I would like, it's going to expire in about a week or two, and I don't have a problem with paying for antivirus, so I was wanting a recommendation for one, a good one that I could, you know, I do want to pay for, you know, extra features and all.
Yeah, Kaspersky is one of the good ones, but we also have a few listed on our Security Tango website at securitytango.com. Nick really likes Avast antivirus because it has a sexy voice telling you your antivirus definitions have been updated. AVG is another one. They both have free versions and pay versions as well. One of the things that we have said over the years is that, you know, like Norton and McAfee are the two big AV companies. We usually don't recommend those because the bad guys know they're there too, and they won't release a virus or malware until it can get past Norton. So there's a couple of days where it can roam the wild before Symantec gets it updated.
Yeah, I had a Norton suite years ago on a computer, and it was the worst thing.
That was the other problem. Norton got a bad reputation for a while.
Is Norton still around?
Yeah,
Norton's still around. I have it.
They got bought by Symantec. The Norton suite tried to do too much. And it overwhelmed computers. So if you had a ton of RAM and a very, really fast processor, it was fine. But average computers, it just slowed everything down so much that they got a bad reputation for a while. In the last couple of versions, they have addressed that so that now it's much leaner and much cleaner. But again, you'll see this with a lot of AV companies. There's an antivirus program. But then there's also like a security suite that will have antivirus and anti-malware and anti-spam and anti-phishing and anti-this and anti-that. You try to run too much of the suite and you slow down your computer. So you need that, you know, fast dual processor. You need 4 or 8 gigs of RAM to run some of these bigger suites. So that's what's nice about the smaller programs is they don't use much resources.
And thanks again to Blake for your call. I got to tell you, I love AVG. You know, you guys turned me on to that program years ago. It's great.
Yep.
It's like you can't kill that program. Yep. It's great. You know?
I've been using one on the Mac from Sophos. Most of the companies have Mac versions as well. I keep finding all these Windows viruses coming in my email.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do anything on my Mac, I don't want to pass them on to my Windows friends.
Right, exactly. Harry from Rochester, you're up next. Thanks so much for calling Soundbites, Harry.
Okay, hi. Simple question. Neuro keeps opening up when I'm trying to play my MP3, and I want VLC to be my default player on my XP machine, which is no longer online. How do I do that?
You need to change your file association table. So you want to find an MP3 file, the actual file itself, not an alias, on the desktop.
Mm-hmm.
You want to left click on it once.
Uh-huh.
Hold the shift key down and right click on it. And you'll get an open with command.
Uh-huh.
That will let you pick what program you want to open it with. And in that dialog box, there'll be a checkbox that says always open with.
Uh-huh.
And that will change the MP3 tag to always open in whatever program you tell it.
Okay, you say MP3 file. I've got a folder loaded. You mean go to that?
Yeah, go to that folder and then pick any single one of those MP3 files.
Okay.
Basically, what happens is every time you install a program that can play audio, it makes itself the default. And if you want to change your default, you have to do it that.
Yeah, I thought I was doing that with, you know, selecting one file and doing something similar, and it would start with VL.
Yeah, that opens may open that one file that one time, but
yeah,
you want
that was it.
Yeah, you want to make sure that always open with checkbox is turned on.
So the key is to hit the shift key after I do the left click.
Right, you get that open with command. Alrighty.
Thank you so much, Harry, and to everybody else that called today. Thank you for listening, and you know, we appreciate you coming along with us on this holiday weekend. Nick Francesco and Steve and Dave will all be back together again next weekend. And again, from all of us here, we hope you have a fantastic holiday weekend. You've been listening to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thank you again so much for tuning in. The German radio program is on the way next. Lots more great music all weekend long as well here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.